Thanks, Jack, for the introduction and the general overview of how we got to where we are with drain code. So what I want to talk about today is how we have got to where we are and what's before you in terms of a present bill, and then perhaps where we might go or some alternatives to what we see right now. The Michigan is somewhat unique in the way it's handled drainage, but back before we became a state, there was something called the Swamp Act, which was kind of a homestead bill that said, you know, go out, drain the land, and it's yours. And so this means that we were able to develop a lot of the Thumb area and southern Michigan and so on, the wettest areas. And the way that this was done was kind of on a local basis back in the 1800s, where a group of people would get together, they would petition for drainage that would benefit some area of land, and a project would be created. There would be an assessment district to pay for this, and initially, after the project was done, those assessment districts sort of faded away. There wasn't much thought as to what needed to follow in terms of maintenance. But as the drain systems grew, there became the necessity to have someone oversee what was happening on a larger basis. And so by about the turn of the century, the office of drain commissioner was considered a county office. Before that, there were drain commissioners, but they were in charge of individual drain districts. And a drain district is legally a body corporate and set up so that it can there can be assessment within that district, it can conduct projects, it can sue or be sued, it can hold property, all those sorts of things. Well, kind of fast forward to now, perhaps I should go between 1900 and, I don't know, 1940 or something like that. There were opportunities then, partly because we had mechanization and we were able to dig bigger drains faster. So before World War II, most of the area that was going to be developed for agriculture had already been drained with the larger drains. So that issue of a need for large drains doesn't really exist in the state, and I think you'll find agreement from everyone, even including Farm Bureau, on that. What's needed in agricultural areas is maintenance of the drains that were created before. And the drainage area in the state is sort of a line, sort of parallel with maybe Bay City or something like that. Above that, we get into sandy lands, and the issue of drainage is not so important there. So you had a situation where for agriculture, most of the major work had been done before World War II. And you now find that there are a number of drains around the state that were created for agriculture under the drain code that still exist and have not been maintained since then. The 40, 50 years with no maintenance. So finding out about the drain code, I was getting calls from people who suffered under the drain code for a number of reasons. And one of the reasons was lack of maintenance. And the concern about using the existing code, now I'm talking about present day, is that if you petition, this is a petition response document, if you petition for work, you are petitioning to the drain commissioner, but the drain commissioner or drainage board. If it's an inter-county drain, you have the drain commissioners from each county plus the Department of Agriculture mediates whatever vote they have. If there's a dispute, they'll vote one way or the other. The petition goes to the drain office, and then there's a decision. Is there a need or is there not a need? And that's the extent of the public decision. And therein lies a lot of the problem with the drain code. For instance, in other states, there may be a petitioning process, but the petitioning process leads to a project that's laid out publicly, and there's some decision publicly on what the project is. That's not really true in Michigan. Now, it's hard to find in the bill that you have before you, 220 pages, and you see lots of meetings in there. But if you look at case history, and if you look at the way the drain code actually works, that first decision called by a board of determination or by the drainage board, is there a need or is there not a need, that's the decision-making step. And that step is made before there's any information about what kind of project it's going to be, how big the project is, how expensive, how much land it's going to encounter. And Jack told you that I got involved because of a project that I was part of a land conservancy. We looked into it and he said, oh, you know, there must be a little more democracy here. Surely we can go to court. So, you know, there must be a way to say there's an alternative that can happen. And it turns out there's not. Okay, so as we looked at this, and I say we because there were a number of people that were beginning to call, we formed a group called Michigan Drain Code Coalition. And it's really a citizens group. And there are probably about six or seven people around the state that have stuck with this over the last 10 years or so as various bills, basically the same bill, have come up before the legislature. And I was trying to think how to portray our group. First of all, we don't have an office. Secondly, we're pretty determined, so we keep reading the bills. I'm probably one of the first people to get out and underline and try to figure out what the changes, the latest changes are in the bill. One member essentially brings up the issue of good governance all the time, which is, I think, something that you would find interesting. Another brings up tax fairness and tax policy. Someone else looks at, and that's tends to be me, whether this is a visionary document that will lead us into the future. We're still working with an agricultural past, and yet this code applies to our cities and our suburban areas, but it was set up for agricultural purposes. So I'm interested in seeing something that will take us into the next century in a different kind of environment than where we started from. Another person looks at citizen participation. And another looks at environmental awareness. And the last person, perhaps maybe most valuable, is a gentleman who examines the law. Where does the actual commas and ands and ors, where do the subsections lead us? And how do they relate to past policy and past legal decisions? So as a group, if I had to go out and form a group and hire people, I probably would have looked with people who would have those same kind of interests. But these are all volunteers. Early in the morning, we're on the phone talking to each other. So I'm delighted to be able to talk to you about Drain Code because you have in the Senate before you a bill, SB 217, which each representative in the House and the Senate needs to decide, is this where we want to go? What I'd like to suggest to you today is that we can patch and patch this code, but it's not going to take Michigan forward into the next century with any of those items that I talked about, tax fairness, good governance, environmental awareness, all those things. So I've put on the back table, and I hope you'll pick this up, some specifics. People tend to say that I get into the minutiae too much, but you do have to look to see what's actually in the code. And I'm talking about the Headley issues that are in this code. This is a major concern here. Is this a new bill or is this not a new bill? You know? I mean, Dick Headley would say it doesn't make any difference whether it's a new bill or not, but others in the legislature say if it's a new bill, then the Headley amendment should apply. Does the Bolt decision apply? For those of you who don't know, the Bolt decision was, it's Bolt versus the City of Lansing, and under Municipal Finance Act, they were separating storm and sanitary sewers, which is a good thing, but they ended up specially assessing a portion, and one gentleman, Mr. Alexander Bolt, said, excuse me, I didn't get any benefit. And this went to the Supreme Court, upon which there was a decision that said to the legislature, will you please decide what's a tax, what's a special assessment, and what's a fee, a user fee. So the question is this a tax bill or is this a special assessment bill? I've told you this has been around through several sessions, and in this session, substitute 2 changed all the word tax to special assessment. Substitute 3 changed the word special assessment to tax. Substitute 4 goes back to current language because, oh my goodness, we don't want it to be a new bill. And then Headley issues come into play. So now it's a mix of special assessment and tax. But this is a tax bill. The major chapters in here are revolving fund, how to assess, who's going to be assessed, who's going to pay, who makes the decisions. So when I began, my interest was environmental. It grew to understand that there were tax issues and there were property rights issues. And I'd like to speak for a few moments on property rights issues because we started in the last century digging drains, and I told you that sometimes those drain districts would dissolve. So there wasn't any clear recording of how much property was under the control of the drain commissioners. So now you have, for instance, in my hometown, you have a small drainage system, and there is nowhere recorded how much land from the center of the drain is controlled by the drain office. And since there's been no maintenance on that drain for years, although people are paying taxes, no one knows exactly what is the drain easement, and so they've built right up to the drain. And some people think that they're not building on a drain, they're building on a river, because actually this drainage system was rivers that had been dug out. And there's another problem. Is it a natural stream or is it a drain? That gets us into the federal and state exemptions that exist for drains in terms of maintenance, which also get into Soil and Sedimentation Act. And in general, you don't have as high a standard to meet if it's a drain for agricultural purposes. However, that for agricultural purposes creates problems too, because of course there are reasons for drains other than agriculture. So there was a section added to the drain code, which was drains essentially for health, chapters 20 and 21. And if you were talking about the drain system within Lansing, you're talking about enclosed drains and sewers, and that's people's image of drains if you live in an urban area, as opposed to a ditch in a suburban or rural area. If the drain is for health issues and not agriculture, then it's not a petitioning process by individuals. You pass a resolution by some level of government, and that stands for the decision of need. So whatever resolution happens at that municipal level, if it's passed, then you assume that there is a need, and then it goes to the drain office, and there's a process by which they decide how big the project is going to be. But getting back to what's the need and what is the outcome, you'll find that farmers, local people, are reluctant to petition because what they want is relatively small and defined action, but they have no control over whether it will grow and grow. There was an example, Sheboygan and Creek, where the drain project grew to $7.8 million. And basically, the petitioning was by people way upstream, I think only 3 houses that had built in a fairly wet area, and they felt they could get some relief for a drain project. They didn't envision this large project, and who was going to pay for it? Not those folks, but everybody along Sheboygan and Creek. So we have this, and you're nodding because you're familiar with this story, yes, okay. I could have chosen any portion of the state because this happens over and over again. So you find that people are reluctant to use the process that's in the code because there's no control as to where they're going with the process. However, some other people look at the code and say, I think I can use this to my advantage, and this also happens. And so you have people who say there's a help need, when what, in my opinion, is actually a personal need, often a development need. There's a wet area out there that I want to develop, so I will petition for a drainage project, and I will have the drainage district, everybody in the district, contribute to payment to help me drain my land so then I can build on it. Now, I personally don't want to be paying for that person's development. And that's my personal opinion. I'm not anti-development, but I think that the development should pay its own way. And there, the drain code gets used this way by people who know how to work their way through it. So, you heard my complaints, okay? Let's see if we can talk about where we might go instead of where we're going with this particular bill. If we tried to devise something different for Michigan, now bear in mind that states all around us in the Great Lakes, more than 10 years ago, back in the end of the 80s and the beginning of the 90s, decided that they were going to look at drainage issues, how they were managing natural resources, and they revised how they handle their drainage issues. There isn't any other state that has the Office of Drain Commissioner, a one-person taxing authority whose tax assessment has to be appealed to that person. You can't take your tax assessment to the Michigan Tax Tribunal as of 1992. You can appeal special assessments, but not drain taxes or special assessments, whatever we're going to call them. There is not this same office in other states. What there is generally a drainage board, which is a professional group. Often there's an engineer, there may be an environmental person on there, there may be some other just administrator providing good governance. And that board receives petitions, designs a project, presents the project back to the public, and then there's a public decision on what the project is going to be, what its scope is, what its cost is going to be. Well, I'd like to suggest that maybe Michigan might go in that direction. I don't think this is unreasonable. This is not what I call good governance. But you even have to ask the question, should it just be one drain code? Because where we started from, and all that goes into this, began from an agricultural need. Okay? And now this covers things that are in our urban areas, our suburban areas, as well as rural areas. Not every county in Michigan has drain commissioners. 83 counties, 72 drain commissioners, I think. Isn't that right? Something like that. One is not elected. One is appointed in Huron County by the county commissioners. I've suggested a number of times that maybe we need not one code, but two or maybe even three. Something that works for urban areas in order to be able to maintain the infrastructure that we know has problems. Something that would work for the rural areas. And maybe something that's in between. I'm not sure. I'm just throwing this out as a possibility. I think that maybe a county could decide which version they want to rule their county depending on where they are in terms of development and what their needs are in the county. So the very first question is, do we have one code that covers everything that has to do with drainage? Let me jump back one more step here and say that when you think of a drain, you may not be thinking of a small-scale sewage treatment plant, but that's covered under the drain code also. The drain code says that a drainage conveyance, a waterway, may carry sewage. And so we find, just to the point that it doesn't harm human or animal health, there's not much regulation over that. So you end up with what most people would look at and call as natural streams, and they're also called drains. And then you're talking about really huge conveyances. In southeast Michigan, the Coon Drain is being built for, I don't know, probably about $200 million now. And there are several others that need to come along. The SEMCOG area in southeast Michigan says that $52 billion, that's a B, are needed probably to just upgrade our infrastructure needs in southeast Michigan over, say, the next 20 years. Where's the money going to come from? It's very handy to say it can come from the drain code, because an assessment under the drain code cannot easily be challenged. A municipality doesn't say, oh, no, it's not me. You know, it has to come from, it's coming from the drain houses. I'm only spreading the assessment. And we have to ask, is this the best way to handle the problems that exist, the legitimate problems that exist in our urban areas? And I'd like to tell you that there is information from other parts of the country and new science coming in that says that there are other ways to handle these problems. Let me give you some examples. The idea of the rain tax, and the reason it got that name here, is because you're talking about all the rain that falls and does or does not infiltrate into the ground. The drain code doesn't talk anywhere about how much runoff there is from impervious surfaces. You would think that that would be the logical way of saying that's your benefit. By the way, there's no definition of benefit in here. You're assessed, but there's no definition of benefit. So that's why I say it's a tax. Okay. So if there's infiltration, why not give a credit for those people who hold back the water, who don't contribute it to the public system, who don't make other people pay for building larger and larger infrastructure? So I like the name rain tax, because the water cycle is we learned it in, I don't know, third grade, you know? Water falls, some of it runs off, the majority infiltrates into the ground. When you pave over the surfaces, then of course the majority is going to run off. So if people are able to hold back water, why not give them a credit for that? It would be less work for a public system. And they've tried that. In Portland, they paid individual people $50 to go out and disconnect their downspouts. They made little gardens. The rain that fell on the roofs of their house went down to their gardens, went into the ground. There's still land out there to accept the water. The DEQ has suggested that not every parking lot has to be 100% impervious. The Michigan Townships Association is a model of that. If you go there, it looks like a very beautifully designed parking lot, but if you notice, instead of coming to a curb area with a built-up curb where water can't flow up and over the curb and into the center planted trees, the curb is missing, and water flows down and is collected in that small center area. That's a very small design difference. Here's another example of how a different way in which water could be handled. We had an A&W built in our area, and they basically built something like a septic field underneath the parking lot, and the water that fell on the parking lot went into a little sedimentation tank and then went into pipes underneath the parking lot and filtered down into the ground. They did not connect with the municipal system. Another example, in rural drains, the maintenance that is required in digging out the ditches just loosens up a lot more sediment. And you find that after digging a ditch by conventional methods, that within 1 or 2 years you've got just as much sediment in the drain as you did before, because the banks aren't stabilized. When you're digging a larger ditch or a river and calling it a drain, straightening, widening, deepening, that kind of thing, you have to deal with natural processes. And the more you work at the banks of it and the more sediment you have there, the more work you have. So isn't there a different way? Yes. There have been a number of different ways that suggested that you maintain the banks, you plant riparian buffers, and so on. Why not give credit to those who make less work for the drain system? Why not give credit to people whose property is damaged by a drain? These are one of the big issues that I have with this particular code here, is that in the current code, the assessment is made after damages are awarded. The word damages has disappeared. There appears to be very little concern for private property. Another suggestion is that if land is going to be flooded and damaged, you compensate. Those are called flood easements, and they're used in other states. When I hear that there's no other way to deal with drainage issues in Michigan, I think that it's just people have not looked around. So one of my primary suggestions is let's look at what other states do. Let's see what good examples there are in other parts of the country, and let's see what will work for Michigan. We have to craft a Michigan solution. I mean, we're a really wet state here. So, you know, Kansas isn't going to apply to us all that much. Oh, yes, I know. But, of course, we say not our water from Michigan. So what else would a new code do? Well, of course, it would have good citizen representation. By that, I mean the ability to vote, but also to suggest alternatives and to know what's going on in the process. It would have to conform to... it would have to take into account, anyway, past case law. And this gets difficult because one of the things that is also unique in Michigan is that when that drainage tax district is created, case law says that everybody who lives within that district now has prescriptive rights to drainage. I find this a little strange. If I'm paying for a special assessment for lighting along the street here, I pay for that lighting, I pay for that project. When that project is done, do I have a right to more individual lighting? I don't think so. It's because we create these permanent taxing districts that we have this idea of prescriptive right to drainage, which can't be extinguished. So we have drains out in the country that aren't really needed anymore, but we can't get rid of them because they're so-called permanent rights to them. Now, the reason I was laughing about Kansas is because in Kansas, apparently, the state said, okay, we're just going to take a new look, and they extinguished a bunch of rights from the past. Not sure if that would appeal to everybody, but I think it's something that needs to be on the table. The idea of a one person or small group of people that continually make the issues regarding drainage, I think, also should be changed. If we had a professional group, we'd have to decide how that group would also be overseen. But I think that can be worked out because it's been worked out elsewhere. One of the problems with what I call a lack of professionalism, and I don't really mean to be critical of individual drain commissioners. I just mean that if you go to this county or that county, you're going to find that because there's one person decision-making authority, whoever's in the office gets to make those decisions. And it's not consistent from county to county. So I'd like to see more professionalism in the whole office across the state. What else? The code needs modernizing. I've heard that this bill is a modernization. I think that from what I've told you so far, it's far from meeting modern needs, and it certainly isn't meeting future needs very well. Yes, it has references to past bills that have been passed, but you don't have to have those in current code. If you were to stick with... Did I bring my copy here? No. Of current law, the Uniform Condemnation Act still applies. It doesn't have to be referenced in the drain code. Don't tell me just by putting a reference in here that you're modernizing this bill. If you're referring to current environmental code, don't tell me you're modernizing just by referencing in here. That exists outside drain code. But now I'm talking, because I began with talking about environmental law, we now talk about why we are in this process of revising the drain code. When ANRIPA was consolidated in 94, before that, a couple of years before that, there was a conflict identified between drain issues and consolidating our environmental laws. And that's how this particular prototype for drain code got started, because the decision was made that you couldn't put the drain code into our recodified ANRIPA. You had to hold it outside because there were exceptions. I think that that was probably a poor decision, because Michigan is one of two states that has delegated powers from the federal government dealing with wetlands, 404 delegation. And so Michigan has to administer, pretty much according to federal law, those issues that have to do, not always, but often with drainage, wetland issues, and is there going to be development or is there not, and all that kind of thing. So it's something that our DEQ and DNR are constantly having to deal with, and yet the drain code stands outside the body of law that they administer. I think that if we're going to look at drain code for the future, we're going to have to figure out how to mesh those two. This particular bill was drafted by the Statute Review Committee, which was mainly drain commissioners. And when you go through the bill and you know what cases have gone to court, and you look at this bill, you'll see it's drain commissioners 1, citizen 0. Anytime that a case has been lost in court, you'll find an adjustment in here so that it can never be lost again by the drain commissioners. This, I think, is one of the things that makes me angriest. I think there needs to be some clear oversight about what is being written. And I don't know how we're going to get people to read through this much information. But I have tried in the past to supply specific details to whoever wants to ask, and I'll invite you to ask me again. I'll try to answer any question, point to the chapter and verse in here, and have you look that up.